The stars live here.
Are you ready?
On air. Online.
Are you ready to have a good time?
On your smart speaker and wherever you stream. Broadcasting from Montreal and around the world.
The Jeremy White Show. Available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
Well, in this day and age of artists announcing world tours, pretty early on, it's becoming more and more frequent for bands to be announcing shows, you know, like 9 months, even a year in advance. These guys, no exception, with a massive Canadian tour announced for 2025 with dates pretty much covering the entire country, kicking off in Victoria, BC on February 18th, running through Kelowna, Calgary, Edmonton, Regina, Winnipeg, London, St. Catharines, Montreal, Halifax, Moncton. I'm already tired from how many tour dates they're going to be doing. Make sure you go check them out online on all the socials and get your tickets for a 2025 tour dates for Mother Mother. I'm joined now by Ryan from Mother Mother, who I haven't seen in quite some time. Last time we spoke was when the last record was coming out, so it's good to see you and welcome back to the show. How you doing?
It's good to see you too. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Talking about that, and a lot of artists announcing tour dates far in advance before the dates actually happen, it's becoming more of a norm. Talk from the artist's perspective, is it more beneficial to have your tour dates announced way up in advance to the fans? I mean, what's the benefit to it?
I don't even know. It's like, I couldn't even give you the efficient technical answer. I know that we have just a lot going on. So you just get it all up and let go, I guess. Yeah, I should probably like talk to my manager and ask him why we do that so I can tell interviewers the skinny.
I thought you were going to say, oh, well, it's because concert tickets are so expensive. We need fans to be able to save up in time.
I have no idea. I feel like a bad professional right now, to be honest.
But it's true. I mean, like a lot of artists are doing that these days. I mean, like tours are getting announced, you know, like a year in advance, like in COVID. I mean, everything was getting postponed, but now it's like things are back to normal. So it's like, I find it interesting, you know, like, oh, you know, 2026, we're going to be coming to your town. And I'm like, it's 2 years from now. Like, how am I still supposed to be excited about it?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the show. So obviously you guys have been on the road for quite some time now throughout Europe and just pretty much around the world. How much has touring changed for the band coming out of the pandemic? How much has it changed for you guys? I mean, financially, is it more expensive for you? I mean, talk a little bit about the challenges.
Yeah, I think post-COVID touring is just more expensive, like inflation and yeah, getting over to Europe, for example, is insanely expensive. But you know, we've been fortunate enough to like receive this windfall of new fandom and success and support from an audience that seems devoted and willing to buy tickets. So we can kind of get over to Europe and play 32 dates like we just did, just got back a couple weeks ago, and you know, kind of make it work. So we're blessed. But yeah, like the bigger you get, the more expensive it is. It's kind of like you're just chasing this carrot.
Yeah. And as the bigger the band gets, I mean, I feel like the bills also get a little bit bigger as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The venues get bigger. The capacities, everything gets bigger. And I guess that's what you want, right?
Yeah.
You want to spread more love. That's the idea.
No, it's true. I mean, you know, there's just so much conversation online with like different fan groups. I mean, like, you know, talking about prices of concert tickets, but, you know, fans will be moaning about the price of tickets or merch, but they don't understand necessarily like how much bills the band has to cover before they actually take home something at the end of the show. I mean, from covering the crew and production, it's like, I don't think fans kind of necessarily understand where their money goes. So it's interesting to talk to an artist and get their perspective. I mean, so that's why I asked him, I mean, like, you know, theoretically, I mean, I would think it's probably more expensive, like just going through, I mean, just with flights and having to book buses and everything post-pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is. It's a harder world to function as a touring act. Absolutely. But I mean, the music industry has never been for the faint of hearts.
Yeah.
I think if you want to get into the arts and make a career, it's like you're signing up for a hard path. If you want to protect the sanctity of your creative process, it should be a hobby. As soon as you start blending commerce and your creativity, it's like you're setting yourself up for some conflicts of the soul and a hard road. But you know, if you can make it work, it's so worth it, because at the root of what you're doing is you're sharing this transcendent energy of song to human, and between that cycle is so much goodness, so much powerful beauty. And once you touch it, you're kind of just willing to weather the storms of the music industry in order to just stay close to that.
When did you realize that this wasn't just a hobby and this was going to be your career?
I think I hoped it would be my career from a very young age. As soon as I had that transaction, I remember learning guitar and being so enamored with this instrument, stay in my room all day practicing. And I just wanted to share this magic that I was experiencing. I always had the urge to share. So I like went down to my principal. I was in like grade 4, and I said, I want to play for the school.
Yeah. Well,
you know, how can we make this work? And he says, why don't we get you set up with your little amp at the end of an assembly when people are leaving, you can just start playing. How's that? I'm like, that's great. And so,
wow, that's what awesome. I did.
Yeah. And it was a big deal for me. I was like, I got a big gig today. Went down there. It's just kind of like riffing blues scales. And, you know, kids would come up and be like, that was cool, man. Like, liked what you're doing. And yeah. just that exchange, like, okay, this is it. That's the best.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better than that.
Yeah,
I mean, want more of that.
Look, even in this day and age of like, you know, produced music where everybody's into EDM or hip hop, it's like, yo, when somebody picks up a guitar and starts like noodling and it sounds good, like there's nothing cooler than that.
Totally. Yeah. It's very, very good. It's a very good thing.
Who was the guitar hero that made you want to pick up the guitar?
I think I got really into Clapton and Jimmy Page, Jimi Hendrix, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Yeah, like the usual suspects, like pretty cliche in my guitar hero
right
catalog. Yeah.
I mean, look, those are the best of the best. I mean, if you're going to learn from somebody, I mean, those are the guys you're going to learn from. But I don't really see you playing Strats or anything like that, like on tour. I mean, like you're playing like pretty big body guitars, right?
Yeah, I guess the introduction to electric guitar built a bridge into songwriting, and I guess the type of music that you preferred to listen to for how it made you feel emotionally, which is different than like Guitar Hero stuff. It's like,
yeah,
my favorite guitar player is Joey Santiago from the Pixies, who right. like
had him on the show. Dude's a freaking legend.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a legend, but like his playing is so snaky and strange. And
huge
not
Van
virtuosic.
Halen fan, by the way. Huge
oh, really?
Van Halen fan.
Cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, so once I discovered the music that moved me emotionally and not necessarily impressively, then, you know, my preference for tones and guitars and just how I played totally changed. It wasn't important to me to be flashy or impressive. I just wanted to compose music that moved the emotional needle
yeah.
more so.
See, I'm also a fan of that type of guitar playing as well. I mean, like, I'm a huge Van Halen fan, like, you know, I mean, like every other guitar player. But at the same time, I'm also a huge Def Leppard fan of the more melodic stuff where you can sing the guitar solos.
Sure, yeah.
It's not just wankery showing off how fast you can play like a George Lynch or Yngwie Malmsteen. It's like even Richie Sambora or, you know, you look at Neil Sean from Journey. I mean, those are Neil Sean told me when I interviewed him, he told me Steve Perry always used to call them front row licks. And if the chicks in the front row can't sing them, well, then what's the point?
That's hilarious. Yeah, no, there's some truth to that. Melodic potency. Quality over quantity, for sure.
Yeah. So you never wanted to be the shredder. I mean, even though you're a fan of Clapton and, you know, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, I mean, like those guys know how to solo, but like you never wanted to be Eddie Van Halen.
Well, I think I did. It's just I wanted the other thing more. I went to jazz school when I moved to Vancouver and was like shredding, you know, complicated outside scales all day.
So you were like you were like facing the devil in Crossroads.
Yeah, I mean, that movie is what actually turned me on to guitars, that last scene.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched that movie and I was like, Dad, you got to buy me a guitar. That movie changed my life, I think. I don't think if I watched that movie, we'd be talking, be honest.
Isn't that one of the greatest movies ever? I mean, like, not only is Steve Vai just like the coolest cat ever, but like Ralph's character is just so awesome.
It's so awesome. The way he plays with his fingers and just... He's so good at miming the guitar. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And just the whole story arc. Yeah. Like that really got into my bloodstream.
How old are you when that movie came out though?
Would have been like 9 or 10.
Yeah. So there you go. It would have been super influential. Like you see that. Yeah. I want to play guitar.
That was it. That was a sealed deal.
So yeah. Talking about guitar wise, I mean, like on tour, what are you using these days? Are you going like the Fractal Helix route? Are you playing real amps?
Kemper.
Okay.
Yeah. I find like it took me a long time to figure out how to make Kemper sound good. Mm. And I was like, oh, just do very little. I find like with those amp modeling, you can really chisel the sound, add compression and like glisten it up.
Yeah.
And the more you do that, you kind of just bludgeon it into a small space of sounding artificial. But if you just get a good sample pack and let it breathe and slightly carve out the EQ with some tasty effects, octavers, whatever, I find it can really just be big and powerful. And a purist will be like, that's not a tube amp. But it's like for the 4,000 people at a show, they're like, that sounds like a great electric guitar.
Yeah.
That's guitar. You know, it's like, I think when you're playing as often as we are, the scale that we are, like just the peace of mind of knowing that your rig is going to behave and give a consistent, awesome sound.
Yeah.
Is worth more than all the gremlins that are in those analog setups, not to mention the stage volume. It's like there's zero stage volume at a mother show except for the drums.
Right. All in ears.
So there's so much control and finesse for the front of house engineer to just make it sound beautiful.
Yeah.
So I prefer it for this band. But if I was like in a blues trio and you needed to hear how that amp was like hitting the ambient space,
yeah,
I'd be out of in ears. I would just be feeling the room and like just making those tubes work.
Yeah, cranking it up so on stage.
It's different. It's like it's project dependent. And for mother where it's so dense and complicated and the vocals need to shine through, as I think as much control as you can have, the better.
Yeah. How much are you guys relying on playback for your live shows?
It's pretty subterranean, like augmentative. It doesn't sound like there's playback, but if you took it out, you might just feel a little less girth.
Right. It's less full.
Yeah. So it's more that than it is taking over.
Especially with stuff, I mean, like if you're using technology like Kemper's, it's like you can go into your show computer and dial in, you know, patch changes or like, you know, recreate your studio sound live and, you know, get the computer to do volume swells. Like there's endless possibilities with the playback technology these days.
And we do. I stopped doing the pedal board tap dance a few years ago. Changed my life. Now I can just look at the crowd, engage from like the heart, from the eyes, and not be like doing this up and down pedal board dance. It's just a game changer for connection.
Yeah. Is your tech doing the changes for you or is it all programmed?
MIDI is changing it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a total game changer. The first time I ever heard about that was Corey Churko and Shania Twain's band. They even like programmed in like the volume swells on the soul of like Dan Dones and that don't impress me much and stuff. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, totally. You can do if you're on click, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Like, you know, you see fans sort of talk shit about it online here and there, but then like, I'm all about it. I mean, like, especially with the price of concert tickets and the expectations from fans these days, I mean, you kind of need to provide the perfect show. And if that's what it's going to take to do that, I mean, I don't see an issue with it if it's complementing the performance.
It's just project dependent. It's like if you're going to see a rock band, you need a human spirit. Like the predominant spirit of the show needs to feel spontaneous and dynamic and have that elasticity of a human breath. Yeah. And as soon as you start getting those tracks hindering that or pushing that down, then I think you're not doing the right thing for the context. I think fans don't get it because I think they just think backing tracks evil, fake.
Yeah,
you know, and
they're
miming. The layman doesn't totally understand. But I don't think enough people care for it ever to really be a problem.
Yeah. The casual consumer can't tell the difference, but you know, it's like the nerdy guitar guys are like, he didn't even change he didn't touch a pedal board right there. Now it's a clean tone.
Yeah. But what's so impressive about pressing a button with your foot?
Exactly. All the boomers and dads out there, like, you know, Richie Sambora would have touched the pedal board.
Yeah. You're there to cultivate and accommodate an emotional and hopefully transcendental experience between the force of this music and the people. How you achieve that is up to you. And what matters is if you are successful in achieving that. And now more than ever, when we do shows, not being able to tap dance, having like the support of the computer in the right tasteful way, we're able to just dial in on the emotional frequency of the people in the room. And I think people are walking away way more lifted from a spiritual place than they ever have been at a mother show. And so, yeah, we're all for it.
Do you instruct the front of house engineer to kind of like recreate the sound of the records live, or do you let him sort of take the artistic approach and put his own little spin on it? Because obviously certain, the records sound a certain way, and if I'm expecting to hear Cannonball snare at a live show, but then I hear like a dead snare, it doesn't fit the music, you know? Do you, as the 100%. Artist, do you go in and tell him like, no, you need to make sure the drums sound this way, my vocals need this type of processing?
Of course, and I think any good sound man will study the album and be like, we need to make that snare drum huge because that's the way it sounds on the record. Like, there's a camaraderie to working with a sound man where if they're studied, they get it. Y'all want the same thing. But then once you have those sort of like production aesthetics in place, then it's like, bro, just go hard, make it exciting, make it better than the record. Yeah. Like, take creative liberties, because I think that's what makes a show special is when it is different. Yeah.
There's nothing worse than going to a show where the record sounds like the Enorma Dome, and then you just have like the driest front of house mix possible. And like, no, this is not how the band is supposed to sound.
100%. Yeah. People usually say we sound better live, and that obviously is a nice thing to hear. But sometimes you're like, fuck, do we need to work harder on our records? Like, how is that possible? But I think why they perceive that is because the experience is so enlivened with good human energy. And it's like, we're out there just like fighting for our lives when we play, like we never phone it in. And I think it's a full spectrum sensory experience. Like what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're hearing all comes into shape of a memory. And you go, oh, they sounded way better live, even though we didn't. When all those things come together and inform your memory, that's what you think. And that's fine. That's beautiful.
Talk a little bit about the social media aspect. Of course, your band has gotten a massive, I guess you could call it success, or I mean, like exposure through TikTok and all the different social media platforms. Of course, I mean, TikTok's on the borderline of being banned in the U.S. I mean, how is something like that going to affect a band like yours where, you know, fans have taken and embraced you and used your music as promotional tools on social media? Is the banning of TikTok going to kind of affect you guys in any way?
I mean, I think if that happened in the heat of our going viral back in 2020, then yeah, that would have been pretty devastating.
It would have ruined it. It would have ruined everything.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, we had our wave. It changed our lives. We were introduced to a lot of people around the world. Some of them probably fell away. A lot of them stayed and are authentically connecting to the culture, the music, the personality of the band. And that's equating to real tickets in many faraway places. And so now TikTok, it's a tool to fan the flame of those relationships, but it's not the same as it was. And if it does die, something else will come along, just like MySpace, just like streaming, just like everything. That's just the nature of the universe. So I don't get too scared about big sudden shifts or changes, because that's just what makes life what it is and the music industry what it is. You just have to pivot and change and just keep writing music and keep working hard and stay open, and all will be okay.
Yeah. And it's funny how just the impact that TikTok and all these social media have had on the music industry. I mean, like, you know, you got record labels telling artists like, oh, you need to write a TikTok hit. I mean, like, have you had that experience yet from the label, like your A&R guy saying like, okay, we need to get something that you need to write something that's gonna look good in an Instagram reel, like sound good on somebody's cooking video?
Yeah, fortunately, I think because we are our stature, like we've been a band for so long, it's like,
yeah,
we are who we are. It worked for inexplicable organic reasons that weren't strategized, and our team kind of knows that. And I think it's like, just go write the best music you can from the most inspired place you can, and should some of it fit that mold, then great. Then of course we're going to like do everything to, you know, prop that up. And I guess commodify on that. But it's never like start there. Like I can't start writing from a TikTok space. Like that would kill my soul. It's like, I'm not in this to get rich. I'm in this to like save my soul from this world. And that's what music does. So I'm pretty protective of my creative process.
Yeah. And especially from an artistic standpoint, you're kind of like, if I'm going in with the intention of writing an Applebee's commercial or something, I think it would take this, suck the soul out of you. You're like, really? That's all I am now?
Yeah. Well, unless Applebee's phoned up and said, do you want to try this out?
Right.
I've done that before. It's like companies have said, do you want to try to write a jingle that feels like sunshine? It's like, fuck yeah, I will try that. I will take that as a great creative exercise.
Yeah.
And see how it goes. It almost becomes a bit sporty and fun. But when it comes to like writing the music that is meant to represent your soul and where you're at in your life, you have to protect that, I think, and really make it pure and sacred.
Yeah. If it comes from the heart, absolutely, you know, keep it precious to you.
Yeah, 100%.
How do you feel about, you know, say like on TikTok, for example? I mean, like fans have been taking songs from a lot of artists and doing like the slow down version. Now you guys have officially released the slow down version of Explode. Does it kind of annoy you from an artist standpoint? It's like, well, no, that's not how I intended you to hear the song. And like fans are kind of like taking it and making it their own version.
It doesn't annoy me too much or at all. There's a thing you do with your songs. It's like raising a kid or something. It's like you just get so inside of the developmental process from writing it to producing it. You're so close to this entity. And then when it's time to let go, it's kind of like, okay, it's the world's now. And you just forget about it. It's like, do what you want with it.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm done with it. I got to move on to the next baby and care tenderly and focusedly on how it develops. And then it's like, go off into the world and slow yourself down, speed yourself up. If that's what people want, I don't really care. I got more songs to write. Like, whatever, who cares?
Yeah. No, I was always curious about that. I never asked any artists about that because it's like, you know, you hear slowed down versions of songs or pitched up versions of songs. And I'm just like, I wonder how the artist feels. Like, you know, like that's their kid. Like they created that. That's their creation. That's their art. It's like taking, you know, a George Seurat painting and adding shit to it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Or it's just like more creative extrapolation and proliferation. It's like I hear some of our slowed down stuff and it's like, oh, that's cool. I could totally see a context where that would feel good and I could drive or like I could vibe out to that in a specific way I can't to the original.
Yeah.
And there's nothing negative about that.
Yeah, totally. Did you hear the slowed down version of Explode? You're like, damn, that version's actually better than our original version.
That one didn't necessarily hit me as well. I love the slowed down version of To My Heart from our record. Yeah.
Nice.
Sorry if you're hearing trains.
No, don't hear anything.
I live by some trains. Oh, great. Perfect.
Yeah. Wait, you live next to the railroad? Like,
I do. I live in a place called Railtown.
It's actually called Rail. Funny, because that's the strip club I dance at.
Really?
I'm just kidding. No. So look, Mother, 2025 tour dates across Canada. You can pick up your tickets. They're going to be going on sale very soon. Of course, going to be performing in Montreal at the Place Belle. Going to be a massive gig on March 2nd next year. It's going to be great. Also going to be performing Calgary, Edmonton, London at the Budweiser Gardens. I mean, just all the big venues, the Saddle Dome in Calgary. I mean, here we are. Do you ever think you'd be getting into these? I think it's Olympic stadiums next.
No, I think there was a period of time or years where we really hoped, and part of that hope was tangled up in fear that we wouldn't. And that's just a whole other story of like, I think coming up as a band, you do get like sucked into that fear zone and too focused on success and trajectory. But then, you know, you just stay together long enough and stuff like that stops mattering. And we did get to a place where it's like, we're probably never going to get to that arena status in Canada. And, you know, that was just pre-COVID. And I was cool with that. I was like, it's just a blessing and a miracle we've done as well as we have. And then COVID happened. It's like, wow, that's a possibility again. Huh. And now knowing what I know, I'm just going to let go. Like, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, great. Just happy to be here.
Yeah. And you know what? That's a good way to look at it, because there's so many artists that could easily have gotten into a dark hole and gotten incredibly resentful and just hateful of how, why me? It was about to happen. And then just taken away from me, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I think if you get to do it at all, if you're a human on earth, you can hear, you can see, you can feel, you can learn an instrument. Even that is just so much more than a lot of people are afforded.
Yeah.
So it's all perspective.
Yeah. Well, Grief Chapter, available now wherever you get your music. Go and stream it, download it, pick it up. Go pick up the vinyl. Go buy the CD. I mean, like, you know, you can't get your Apple Music signed at the show by the band, so you need to bring physical copies.
Totally. I've been listening to vinyl these days. I've been, like, off the internet.
Oh, yeah.
And just trying to, like, analog my life up a little
bit. Doesn't it feel good?
It's night and day.
Yeah.
It's like there's the worst way to live and there's the best way. And I guess you got to find the happy medium. But, like, I love the detox, like, just no social media and just no, even streaming. It feels like the internet is, like, listening to you listening to music.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
With a record, it's just like, it's just me and this tangible thing. Yeah. It almost becomes like a spiritual meditation being offline.
Yeah. I love that experience of going to the record store on Friday and picking up the new CD or vinyl coming out. And like, I mean, you know, it was excitement. It was an event to it. But people don't have that anymore. You listen to Taylor Swift's new record, boom, you put it on Spotify and okay, it's done. There's nothing to hold. It's not tangible. Like, it's not the same.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't agree more. And I guess the more we push in the direction of the robots, the more people will resist and the more sacred and special, you know, the old way will be.
Yeah.
And that'll be nice for those of us who, you know, still spend time there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty mind blowing, like, how fast things are moving with AI and social media, and everybody's on their phones when they're walking down the street. It's just like, it's so Black Mirror. It's crazy.
The fact that they're putting chips in people's brains, or, like, you know, those the metaverse goggles, it's madness.
It is. It's just like, I don't know, this world and these senses that we were given,
yeah,
is the portal to all the dimensions and all the magic. It's like, we don't need those goggles.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need them.
No, we need a good piece of vinyl, smoke a joint, and just chill. Enough of this madness.
Totally.
Bullshit.
Yeah, totally.
I deleted my Snapchat for like a month and I was like, I don't even need to re-download it. Like, it felt so
good. You don't. You know, I'm like going to the bathroom, like, reach for the phone. It's like, oh, wait, there's nothing on there. I deleted all the apps. Like,
and then you're sitting there reading the shampoo bottle.
Or just like existing and like, wow, this is amazing. It's so funny that that's what it takes,
yeah,
to have like a spiritual breakthrough. It's just doing nothing while you're sitting on the toilet.
Yeah, completely. And then you're looking at the wallpaper like, oh, I should probably change that.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, it was great talking to you. Mother on tour. Make sure you go get your tickets. Going to be heading across Canada next year. Fantastic new record available now wherever you get your music too. So fantastic chatting with you. We'll do this again and hopefully I'll catch you at the Montreal show or Toronto or wherever you guys are around maybe this year. Maybe I'll even see you before then. Who knows?
It would be great to see you in person. Thanks for this beautiful chat. Appreciate you and the support. And yeah, have an awesome day.
The Jeremy White Show.
Get exclusive interviews and bonus content on demand now. Visit youtube.com/Jeremy White Show.